Hi, I'm Doug Harrington, and welcome to our Learn and Be Curious podcast. Since we started Amazon 30 years ago, our retail promise to customers has been guided by three pillars: price, selection, and convenience. Now, a lot of retailers talk about that, but I think what makes Amazon special is how high our standards are. We want to have the lowest prices, we want to have the largest selection, and we want to have the most convenience of any retailer. It turns out that's easy to say, but hard to do. And we're doing it. And today we're going to dive deeper into pricing. And I've got the perfect guest today, Krista Glenn, who leads pricing and promotion. Welcome, Krista.
Thank you for having me.
I'm super excited to go deep in this topic. I love pricing. I love our promise to our customers. I'm so proud of what we do and what your team does. But could we start someplace else?
Sure.
With all of my guests, I like to start with just learning, what's your Amazon story?
Well, my Amazon story started with a little bit of a mystery.
Mm-hmm. I like mysteries.
Yeah, I did a combination of investment banking and private equity before
really?
I went to business school on the West mm-hmm. Coast. And after business school, I was working for Levi's, the jeans company, doing yeah. global strategy, really focused on our Asian business. And one day I got a call from a friend from business school who was at Amazon, and she said, I have a job that I think you'd be great for that somebody on my team is recruiting for, and I can't tell you anything about it.
Nice.
And I was like...
And when was this?
This was 2012.
2012. Okay,
yeah.
Pretty early on.
So it kind of fit the narrative for Amazon being so secretive at the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, my interest was so piqued. And I was like, okay, like what is this job?
That used to be our standard playbook. It's
yeah.
like we would not tell anybody what they were coming in to interview for.
Totally. And it kind of worked, right? Because I was like, yeah. okay, this is going to be cool. So I go through the whole interview process. And I was sure that I was going to find out more information about
yeah.
the job during the process, but I really didn't. I got some hints of a combination of sort of a retail business with mm-hmm. strategy, a growth area. And I was like, I have no idea. But at the time, my then boyfriend, my now husband, and I were living in this tiny little apartment in San Francisco with our golden retriever. And, you know, I was working in this really tech-focused city, but I wasn't really working for a tech company.
Yeah.
And I was just so excited by the promise of what Amazon held at the time. And I was like, you know what? Caution to the wind. We're going to go for it and just see what happens.
And so we made you an offer without you knowing what your job
that's
was?
That's right. Yeah. So
wow.
it was like a brand new project. I was supposed to write the PR FAQ.
yeah. Okay, good.
And
you didn't know what it was.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
And it was either going to blow up and be amazing or
yeah.
I was probably going to have to find a new job. But,
yeah.
you know, I figured I was young and reckless enough at the time to have that be a risk worth taking. And I felt like Amazon was a big place and I would land on my feet if I, you know, did a good job. So we packed everything up and my husband and my golden retriever and I, we moved to Seattle. So we moved here really not knowing. And when I got here, I was really excited by the opportunity.
Yeah.
So it was a program called Amazon Campus, which you probably remember.
Yeah.
It was,
yeah.
I think you had sort of like a love-hate relationship, honestly.
All love.
All right. And the idea was really, how do you bring the college bookstore
yeah.
to campus in a
yeah.
way that is so much more interesting in Amazon than the typical college bookstore,
yeah.
which has, you know, textbooks and t-shirts, but you really don't need that bookstore
mm-hmm.
when you're not, you know, at the beginning of the semester or selling
yeah.
your books back at the end. It was a physical experience
yeah.
and it was a mobile enabled experience for pickup. And we took Amazon's locker hardware and tried to figure out how to work that into the space.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember visiting. Did you come to our warehouse? We had this test space and we had mocked up the whole experience
yeah.
there.
Well, I do remember going out to Purdue. Did you?
Yes. Yeah. That was our first spot.
It was an amazing system. I can't remember the love-hate part of this. I'm still trying
well,
to go.
We never made any money. I think that was sort of the...
oh,
yeah.
Well, if that's the bar, cool there's
stuff.
Many things around here that are not made
yeah.
money. But I thought it was a great experience. I mean, I remember back at the time, so we had Amazon student had been going, I think, by that point. And so we had lots of students using the Prime program. And we would get these messages from these schools. It was kind of like, we're overwhelmed with packages.
Yeah.
We don't know what to do. And they would, you know, they would send us photos and it would be like their mail room just stuffed to the gills with boxes, Amazon boxes.
Yeah.
And the space that you guys ended up building for customers was, well, kind of explain it. Like
yeah.
if you're a student walking into one of these campus spaces, what was it like?
Our promise to customers was that on your peak textbook week, we could get you your stuff in 60 seconds or less.
Yes.
You would walk in with your smartphone, you would check in and it would tell you what locker bank, and we had like a number letter system.
Yes.
You'd walk up, scan your package, the locker would pop open, you'd take your box, and you'd be out the door.
Yeah.
And it was really fun. In that test space, we actually mocked up. We had 10,000 boxes that were empty, and we had simulated this whole peak
mm-hmm.
experience, because I think one of the coolest things we learned from Amazon scale was just like you sort of build the church for Easter Sunday. And
yeah.
so we knew we had to practice and get it right with that SLA, you know, during that peak week to really earn trust. It was one of those jobs where you got to see every single layer of the company. The program itself didn't live on forever, but there were some really cool things that came out of it that, yeah. that have lived on. I think whether it was the technology we built to run the back of house, which is now used for some of the AMZL stuff, or returnless refunds and bringing packages back to the store, not having to have a box, not having to have a return label. That was something we sort of pioneered way back in the day that now obviously customers love that at Whole Foods.
I mean, so much of what that experience was about, we are kind of building anew with kind of newer buildings. So this idea that you would have a, it's effectively a delivery station, but it's also a fulfillment area. So we have products that people can order so they can literally walk in and say, I want this textbook. And like you said, in 60 seconds, you can hand them that textbook.
Yeah.
Plus they can receive packages that are coming from someplace else. And we're starting to do that again as well. We've got, I've been to several of them. We've got some called their our rural, super rural sites where they're delivery stations, but we're putting thousands of the top selling items in the stations as well. So customers can both get their packages and order new stuff with super fast delivery. I just saw some in Europe as well. We call them Nexus over there.
Oh, cool.
Same idea, delivery stations with inventory in them. And it's kind of like the earliest version of add to delivery,
right?
Where you could be ordering something and then say, hey, can I add X, Y, Z to the experience?
Yeah. And it was really fun. Like it was one of the best experiences just to be, you know, a well-funded startup within a big company and have lots of resources and mentors helping you figure it out.
Yeah.
But our own little project was kind of in its own corner and we had a lot of latitude to do some fun things.
I love that. That's how I explained Amazon when I first got here and I came to start our consumables business. And I felt like the same thing. It was like a little startup. We had a team of 23 people. We got some funding from Amazon to get this going.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I came to Amazon, I thought I'd do it for a few years and then go back to the Bay Area and do startups again. And I got here and I was like, oh my gosh, it's like a giant startup factory. There's just like, we're always starting something new. And like startups, some work, some don't. Some become crazy successful, like Prime or Fulfillment by Amazon. Some like Campus were great learning experiences. You try it and then you move on and try something new.
Yeah, you pick the pieces that work and put them in place elsewhere.
Okay, so what did you move on to go do after that?
I really wanted to think about like, what was Amazon good at?
Yeah.
And then what could I do that was more at scale? And so when I thought about what Amazon was good at, pricing came to mind.
Yeah.
Like if you look at the flywheel, you've got pricing, you've got selection, convenience. And I said, okay, pricing seems like an interesting place to learn more. And at the time I wanted to learn more about the 3P business because I'd been, you know, the Canvas organization was organized under retail and I had a lot of exposure to people who worked on the 1P side, on the retail side of the business.
And so for our audience, the 1P is our retail business where we buy the product from the manufacturers and sell it ourselves. And then the 3P business is our sellers and they are buying the product or manufacturing the product and selling it themselves in the Amazon store.
And that was growing so fast.
Yeah.
And I felt like, wouldn't it be cool to go both learn about our third-party business and our seller business and to do something like pricing that I knew was so critically important. But little did I know, it was one of those tricky jobs where you don't necessarily control the inputs, but you have to have a great customer experience.
I'm laughing just because the seller business, the whole trick of the seller business is they control the pricing.
That's
and
right.
So you are in charge of pricing for sellers, but sellers are setting the prices. So what are you actually doing?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. Some of it's basic. It's set up the tools, give them the capabilities to, you know, set prices in Seller Central. Some of it is just tool set and enablement. But I think the magic behind this role is really trying to figure out how do you make sellers a partner and understanding what will delight customers and what will in turn grow their business. And so we were really trying to invent a suite of different incentives and motivations and things like that to help sellers understand what is a good price first and foremost, because a lot of them want to do what's great for customers, but they don't necessarily have the breadth of information that we do. And then give them the tools and the incentives to do that. And so we started by, you know, we do a lot to monitor competitive prices.
Yeah.
That's one of the cornerstones of our pricing strategy. And we did a lot just to start surfacing that information in a really transparent way to sellers. And we said, you know, competitive pricing is really important to us. We'd like you to price competitively. Here's how you can do that in a simple way. Yeah. Here are tools you can do, and you can set minimums and maximums to make sure you're adjusting for the profitability of your business. But all else equal, we know customers love sharp pricing.
Yes.
And then we also started to think about how do we merchandise our store in a way that brings our best prices very easily in front of customers mm-hmm. along their shopping journey.
And that leaves you into the role you are today.
Yes.
Leading worldwide pricing and promotion.
That's right.
We've started to get into it, but maybe you could just back up and when somebody new joins your team, how do you explain to them what Amazon's pricing philosophy is?
Yeah, I think I have the coolest job because I, Amazon really puts its money where its mouth is when mm-hmm. it comes to pricing. If you read our pricing tenets,
yeah.
And maybe we'll come and talk a little bit about why I think tenants are really important
okay.
in a business like this. But our first pricing tenant says, we offer low prices to customers across the full breadth of selection that we offer.
Mm-hmm.
We don't maximize for profit,
yeah.
but we take it as an article of faith that investing in this over the long term creates customer value.
Yeah. Wow. I like that you've memorized it too.
I think I probably got it like so it's a couple of words off, but yeah. you get the gist.
Yeah.
And I think that's so powerful. And sometimes I think a company's tenants or leadership principles are yeah. written down in paper, but then people don't live them. And I can say without a doubt that like on both of those fronts, I feel that like that is how we operate
yes.
every single day. And there's always tension between profitability and sharp pricing.
Yeah.
And I mean, you probably know better than anybody. We don't waver on that. And
isn't that amazing?
So empowering.
I'm glad you raised it like that because I do think what's so different about us is that we have our pricing team focused on how to deliver low prices to customers. And as you said, we believe that they want low prices across everything, not just across some things. And most retailers, and in fact, even when I joined Amazon, think about pricing slightly differently. Pricing is like a lever. It's a tool. And a lot of times what you're trying to say is, oh, should I lower the price to drive sales, or should I increase the price to drive profitability? And you're weighing that thing back and forth. And we came up with a different idea, which says, let's not have the pricing team focus on that at all. Let's just have them focus on having competitive prices. And so we ring-fenced that team and said, you know, go off and do it. And what does it mean to have competitive prices?
There's some selection that you cross-shop for.
Yeah.
So if it's a nationally branded product, customers are going to check prices on that stuff.
Yes.
And it matters. And so we want you to shop with Amazon knowing that if we're featuring an offer to you, that it is sharp and competitive. So we're meeting or beating the price from a wide set of retailers
yes.
that we monitor. We monitor thousands of competitors.
Yes.
Literally thousands. And we're really looking to ensure that our prices are the same or lower as anywhere you might find that selection if you were shopping on any given occasion.
Yeah. Again, when I joined, this is not how we were doing pricing. And it was probably 2007 or so where we had this kind of mindset shift that said, let's really just focus on delivering the lowest prices. And what is the lowest prices? Well, it's as good or better than you could find anywhere else. And it was a very simple concept. And the fact that you're still at this point and at this scale following that same simple concept, which is how do we build trust with customers that we're the best place to shop? Well, we know that a good chunk of them, even when they find something on Amazon, they're going to go check someplace else. Let's make sure when they do check, they say, oh, I'm getting it for as good or better price on Amazon. And every time they have that experience, it's going to engender trust and they're going to want to come back and shop with us. And if we mess that up and they find a better price, that's probably going to be like, oh boy, I don't know if I should trust Amazon going forward. So we put a lot of weight into that particular approach. And again, a very different way of thinking about pricing.
And I think that's one of the coolest things about Amazon is that we do what's best for customers first, and then we figure out how to pay for it,
yeah.
right? And it's never backwards. And that's always, it's really refreshing.
And, whatever we do, we try to make sure that your team is not asked to go deliver some kind of a sales goal or deliver some kind of a profit goal. And it sounds like still to this day, that's going on.
Yeah. I mean, we try to be responsible citizens and make sure we don't have defects and things for sure. But yes, we are, our mission is clear.
Yeah.
But, it makes me think, you like to send emails to us sometimes.
All the time.
About pricing.
You're my email pen pal.
I think like if I go back to a couple that you've sent, for example, you were shopping for a life jacket
yeah.
for your dog.
Yes.
Your new dog. who's into water sports, clearly.
Apparently you watch my social media. You know everything about Arnie.
Yeah, yeah, I do. And I think he's a small dog.
Yeah.
He had like the extra small or the extra, extra small.
Yeah.
And I think you were comparing to Target and you thought we hadn't quite gotten the variation range pricing right. And I think that can happen too, right? Where we're trying to extend one item across a variation, across different sizes or colors or flavors. And we're trying to balance having an exact match on one product versus making sure the whole range works in
fact,
concert.
I think you guys were right on that one. I think I was wrong on that particular one, where I was not even realizing that I was looking at there was different price points for the extra small, the small, the large, the extra large.
Yeah.
Another common escalation that I will send you is I'll read some article where a reporter has taken it upon themselves to kind of look at 10 items and compare them across retailers.
Yeah, it's happening more and more frequently. I mean, I think we're in a macro environment where customers are, you know, wanting to save money. I think on those, you know, it's sort of just a flawed sample size.
Yeah.
Like it's a very few number of items. It's 10 items. We had one very recently. So they had one Dyson vacuum with some features compared to another Dyson vacuum with a whole different set of features.
Yes.
And they were saying, you know, the prices of these aren't equivalent, but the products themselves weren't equivalent. A lot of times they're comparing over different time periods. So they'll look on, you know, June 1st for this item and July 31st for this one.
Yes.
And, you know, things change quickly. And our strategy really is we're matching exact items to each other.
Yes.
We're looking at points in time so we can be competitive every moment of every day. And we're doing it across millions and millions of items. And then, you know, we also have third-party reports that come out on our pricing strategy that are much more sophisticated and robust that say that we have low prices. And those are really great to bring to show, you know, you don't have to take our word for it, but like there's plenty of other reports out there that say Amazon has low prices. And so there's one that comes out before the holidays every year called Profitero.
Yes.
I think you've seen it, that said, you know, for 9 years now, we've had the lowest prices of any retailer. And
yes.
So it's always good to bring those things into the mix too, to show not just how one study could show what our prices are, but really like at scale.
I think when we got into this, I remember somebody saying, what if a customer finds a product? If we say we have the lowest prices, what if they find one that's lower? And then that was easy response back was, thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah.
We're gonna go adjust and learn. And
absolutely.
I think we've been following that all the way through as well. So what's new in the pricing area that you've worked on?
New. Oh my gosh. Lots of new stuff. So, I mean, I think one of the really interesting things is we evolved our grocery pricing strategy, but it's a very different dynamic, right? Like there's local grocers, there's some that operate with a high-low pricing strategy. There's some that are everyday low price leaders. You've got really competitive promotions. So maybe you bought too many eggs, you've got to mark them down, but now I'm matching your markdown and so I'm going to run out of eggs. So there's all kinds of really complicated stuff with grocery. And so I think that's one of the areas we're really digging into. And now we're really trying to think about those different dynamics that are unique to grocery that we can match in a way that really delights customers, but that is smart for how we need to run this business. Same dynamics that are applied to quick commerce, our Amazon Now business, which I'm super excited about. And then obviously, you know, there's been a huge rise in low ASP competitors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, really tricky because a lot of that selection looks the same when you look at it online. And it's from brands that you might not recognize. But sometimes it's exactly the same product and sometimes it's very different. I know you've ordered about 700 garlic presses at some point in time.
And we had a famous kind of period where I was just taking the garlic press category and I was ordering as many as I could from all the different sellers and from competitors and my conference room. I mean, somebody probably walked in there and said, what the hell's going on with this guy? Because I had like every shape and form of garlic presses. But like you said, sometimes you go to these sites and if it's not a branded product with a specific model number, you're in an interesting space. And I did order some garlic presses and they were like little teeny garlic presses. Right. They looked just like the big regular size, but I got it and I was like, oh my God, I'd have to chop up the garlic to put it inside this little garlic press.
Probably not worth it at that point.
And so, you know, how to do mapping and matching with that kind of a competitor, that has been a big interesting challenge for us as well. Those are cool. I also like the price history feature that we put on the site.
Customers love that.
Yeah, which is amazing. And so for any of the products, you can go on there and just say, show me the price history. And we give you the the chart for now for the last 365 days, which is awesome. And it reminds me of, we've had many conversations, which is like, how do we characterize this price for the customer? You know, what is lowest in 30 days, lowest in a month? And we know that actually the real price history, because retail is so competitive and everybody's like, you know, fiercely competing all the time, it's hard to kind of capture the shape of these pricing curves kind of in simple words. And so I think the breakthrough of just like, let's just show them the price history and they can see, oh yeah, this is about, you know, what I'd be willing to pay, or gosh, this seems a little high. I'm going to look for other products or wait on this product. I think it's been a great feature for customers.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's been a big learning on the customer feature side is that they don't want us to tell them it's a great price. They want us to show them with data why it's a great price. And so I think Alexa for Shopping just is a really awesome interface to bring that context and the visuals and things like that. They can see for themselves.
Yeah. You mentioned before, and I do want to switch pretty quickly here into Prime Day, but you mentioned before tenants were important.
Yeah.
Why do you think tenants are important in pricing?
Well, I mean, I think pricing is just one of those things where you said it, right? Like most people run their retail business with this balance of of sales and profitability, right? Like do you lower prices to increase sales and then do you pivot back? And so I think tenants are really cool. And I actually think Jeff was involved in writing, this is way before my time, but the legend has it that Jeff actually helped write the first set of pricing tenants. And I think that the reason they're so critical is because they help teams operate when there's natural tension.
Yeah.
And so we knew with our tenants that there was always going to be a tug between both profitability and pricing and maybe the seller experience and the customer experience.
Yeah.
And I think tenants really exist to help you navigate some of those debates in a way that's it's aspirational. They're not things that you have to do, but it helps guide your thinking in these areas that tend to be hotly debated a lot over time.
I love that. And tenants, we have been, you know, leaning on tenants for decades now, and they are kind of the mental model. Jeff Wilkie used to explain them as the instruction set that we were giving to kind of the future leaders. This is how you do X at Amazon. And we have them across all kinds of teams, but I agree they're super helpful in the pricing space.
Yeah.
And there's some nuances, but I love there's a notion in there that we make it very easy to lower prices and very hard to raise prices.
Yes, there's an asymmetry. It should be harder to raise prices and easier to lower them.
Yes, I love that. And I think we follow that all the time. We never argue about things that tend to lower prices, and we have lots of thoughtful debate about things that might end up raising prices.
Yeah.
And so I think that's great. That's a great mindset to have going into this space. You're the leader of pricing and promotions. We're actually coming up to one of our biggest promotional periods, Prime Day, which you and your team are responsible for as well. Maybe we could start with, like, what's your earliest Prime Day memory?
Ooh, my earliest Prime Day memory. I remember how cool it was that there was going to be a moment just for Prime members, right? Like, I also remember it being a little bit of a mixed experience and ended up feeling a little bit more like a garage sale than brand burnishing event.
You say that very gently.
Yeah.
It was actually, I was kind of deeply involved at the time. And I remember we were wrestling, gosh, we've got the 20-year anniversary of Amazon coming up, the 10-year anniversary of Prime. And it was like, what should we do? And we had all kinds of ideas that were kind of flowing around, online concerts and coupons and, a month of Prime, something like, we were doing all kinds of things. And I think Jeff had kind of proposed, like, what about a Prime Day, one day where we do just amazing kind of deals and promotions, which was interesting because we had gotten so used to the fact that we were kind of, with the exception of holiday, kind of an everyday low price retailer. Right. And we really focused on making sure we were as good or better than everybody else. This idea like, okay, let's take one day and just go bonkers.
Yeah.
But the idea was great. And, you know, we started talking about it in, you know, early 2015. So we didn't have that much time because, we were the birthday was
going to
be
June
or July. Yeah. And I remember, I should probably not admit this, but at the time I was in the camp of like, oh boy, I don't think we should do this. I was in the camp of, there was two things driving it, which is one, we didn't have that much time.
Okay.
And the two, practically speaking, it's very hard to change customer behavior. So we were thinking about what might this do? Might we get a 10% boost, a 20% boost? I mean, it's really, it's very difficult to get customers to kind of learn about something and all decide they're going to change their behavior and do something. And so my sage advice was, boy, this is interesting, but we should probably do this at a different time. I ended up disagreeing and committing, and we were going to go ahead and do it. I was correct. We didn't have that much time,
right?
But I was completely wrong in terms of how we could change customer behavior. Imagine going into it, we had no idea how many people would show up,
right,
and what they would do. We had no idea whether or not this was going to be, again, a 10 or a 20% increase in shopping, or was this going to be a 2X or 3X? We had nothing to base it on. We also didn't have a lot of time with our vendors and our sellers. And so most of them didn't have extra inventory available.
Right.
And I remember the first country starting to come through, and it was kind of like that scene in Jaws where the guy goes, oh no, we're going to need a bigger boat. And you saw the first country start to spike and you were like, wow, this is going to be large. Now, the downside of that was like locusts, the customers went through and blew out all of the top brands and top products very quickly. And so what happened is about halfway through the event, if you showed up then, all that was left was a super crazy
random.
There was, I mean, the memes were quite funny. I must admit, we were all laughing about them. There was one, we were selling a 55-gallon barrel of personal lubricant. Now, I don't know who buys a 55-gallon barrel.
A wrestler, maybe?
I don't know. It was a great deal.
Yeah.
Like usually, it was like $2,500 for this giant barrel of lube, but you could buy it for $1,700. So, I mean, it was a fantastic deal.
Yeah, but, you might need two.
Exactly. But so the internet was going crazy. Okay. They loved and all the goofy stuff. You know, we were selling like knee braces and like totally random. So we had a little bit of egg on our face for that. But we really looked at it and said the idea wasn't wrong, although we got a lot of good-natured and maybe some non-good-natured snark coming into that first event. That next year, we said, we were really on to something. Customers really did change their behavior, but we're going to get ready further in advance and really prepare for it. Using that for how do we prepare for Prime Day now? When do you get started? Who's involved? How many people are involved?
Yeah.
How do you do it?
We started early, and there's a lot of different teams and people involved, right? We're doing this across many different countries. So each local geography has somebody who's responsible for thinking about what it should look and feel specific to that location. There's a lot of people within the Prime team thinking about Prime specific benefits, going out and sourcing really cool deals. And we have lots of people thinking about devices. Our devices play a really big role in those days. We really want to bring forward our own selection and show great, awesome, either new launches, deals and discounts, lots of things around content. So we have videos and new shows and movies often coming out. And then my team is really focused on sort of like sourcing of the retail and the 3P inventory in concert with the local retail and 3P business partners. And we really try to think about what's the selection customers want the most on these days. And I think that's probably the biggest shift from when we started in 2015 to now, is really having a much richer understanding of personalization and the brands customers want. And then we're really thinking about, you know, how do we make the online store exciting for you? Because we want you to come to the store and not just have your list of things that you know you want, but also be inspired to discover something new that you might not have thought about. And I think that's one of the biggest things this year I'm excited about, whether people are doing the gift guide or even just looking at our personalized content that we have on the deals page or the homepage that really knows you better than we ever have before. And I think this Prime Day will be very, very interesting and well curated.
That's fantastic. What are you going to be shopping for?
Oh gosh, I have a whole mix of things. I don't know. I have some basics that I need. I'm a big tennis player, so I always stock up on athletic socks during Prime Day. The best ones are pretty expensive, but they're worth it. So it's always
good. I'm kind of a sock aficionado. Oh. What's your favorite sock?
I like the Beluga socks.
Oh my God, I can't believe it.
You like
We're
the
like
Beluga
twins.
Too? Okay. Well, I mean, they are the best.
Yeah. I have bought the Belega kind of no-show socks for running. I think over 85 times now, if you go onto my detail page. So,
yeah.
Although my family all tells me that no-show socks are now.
Oh.
Not,
that's not cool anymore.
Not cool anymore. I know. I've got to revamp my whole sock strategy going forward.
Yeah, well, and my daughter steals all my socks out of my sock drawer, so I'm always trying to replenish. Anything you're looking for in particular?
You know, I shop all the time,
yes.
As you might not be surprised. I usually try to shop multiple times a day. And
okay.
So our house is like a constant boxes are arriving kind of all the time. I'm about ready to upgrade my my travel luggage.
Oh, yeah.
The carry-on bag as well as kind of the larger suitcase.
Yeah.
So I'm going to see how those line up. I am going to be using a lot the Alexa for Shopping capabilities because I think that's pretty cool now that you can basically tell it in advance, hey, I'm interested in these things. And you can give a full description of kind of like what you're in the mood for or in the market for. And Alexa will come back. Say, this is what we found.
And so, help you decide amongst lots of options.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that too.
Super cool.
Before we go, I allow my guests to flip the script and ask me a question.
Oh gosh, I should have had my escalation list for you ready to go. I think obviously we've been talking a lot about AI. And how we want
AI? Not kidding.
Have you heard of it? I can give you the background.
And
we're thinking a lot in trying to inspire our teams to experiment and use AI in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've been on my own journey with AI, I found like in the beginning it was so cool because everything became knowable, in a much more approachable way. But what I found for myself was that I had this immediate productivity boost and sort of intellectual curiosity boost. And then I felt really sort of like I used it for too much, right?
Okay.
Like I got bogged down and I was like, okay, I'm sitting in front of my phone. And I guess I'm just curious for you, like what does your AI journey look like? Or like, how do you use AI in your role where you're in, you know, the strategic leadership position? You're not necessarily, you know, operating the day-to-day details, but how do you use AI in your life? Mm.
I like how you said that gently. You're not necessarily operating in the day-to-day details.
No, I mean, like you're not running the business at the, like the cog and the wheel
I think
level.
It's very interesting. I mean, one, I get so many touch points with AI because it's touching all of our different teams. And so I'm trying lots of different products, especially kind of our customer-facing products like Alexa for Shopping and kind of all the different beards. So I love all that. But for me personally, I don't really use it to automate the mundane tasks that I have. I've been using it more as almost like a second pair of eyes on big and important decisions. And I've also been using it as a bit as a mentor. And so with Quick, it's our internal tool and it connects to our email and Slack and all my files and everything. You know, recently I was hiring somebody new to Amazon. And so you know, we had all of the feedback from the interview loops and all of the emails that had gone back and forth. And I could go to Quick and just say, you know, the decision I'm trying to make, which is, should we hire this person? You know, what kind of organization structure should we think about? And it was really very insightful. And it wasn't like I'm going to turn over the decision to AI, but it was very helpful to have a partner there that could think and see all the same information that I had and then help think through a decision like that as a kind of a coach or a mentor. And so I've been very inspired by that idea that, you know, as these models become more and more adept at reasoning and capturing all this data, can you use it to make the important decisions even better as you go through there? So I've been really enjoying that one. I also tried another one over the weekend. I'm not going to tell you what it said, but but I said, go through and look at all of my communications for the last year, all of my emails, all of my Slack messaging, everything. And pretend that you're a coach for me. What am I doing well as a leader and what could I improve?
Yeah.
And it gave me back some very insightful recommendations.
Yeah. Oh, that's super interesting. I've done that. I used ChatGPT just for my personal life a lot in the very beginning. And it's always fun to ask those questions. Like, what do you think you know about me? Or like, what do you think I'm good at?
And I'll share one. It was like, it said, you know, you are very brief and direct in your email, in your email communications. And sometimes you literally just have one word like ha or yes or no. And it said, Brevity is good, but sometimes the people receiving it might not know exactly what you're meaning, and they might interpret it that you're being dismissive or not thinking that it's important, when that's not what I'm trying to communicate there. And so they suggested, adding a few sentences that kind of elaborate on the one word responses, especially as I looked through my email history. I was like, oh yeah, that's a very apropos kind of observation of it.
So, it's good to spot those patterns and trends over time that you may not see one off as you're, as you're doing the day to day.
Well, Krista, thank you so much for coming and being a guest. Thank you and your team for everything you do. I have told people in the past, don't tell this to the other teams, but the pricing team is one of our most important teams at Amazon. It's responsible for one of the foundational pillars of Amazon. What you guys do, when you do it well, you earn trust with our customers and they come back and shop with us. If you were to ever do a poor job, you could burn that trust very quickly. And I think your superpowers in this space, by the way, are insist on highest standards, dive deep in ownership. And that comes together for customers, what just feels like a given that the prices on Amazon are always going to be the best prices I could find anywhere else. So that's a great gift that you've given to Amazon.
Well, thank you. We hope to keep it that way. We don't want customers doing the hard work.
Great.
We can do that.
And thank you for joining us on this episode of the Learn and Be Curious podcast. If you enjoyed it, go ahead and subscribe. And if you have any topics or people that you'd like to learn more about, just let us know and we'll invite them on the show as well. Thank you.